thinking about what I should speak on this week, I thought that we would take a break from heavy stuff and talk about something that's important but less difficult to understand. It may be difficult to apply, but it's not difficult to understand. So since it's been some time since we've talked about marriage, I thought I would do so today. And as we begin, I'd like to consider the marriage ceremony. In the ceremony, it says, "Surely there can be no greater human joy than to have a happy marriage, filled with giving and sharing. There is no deeper relationship among human beings than that achieved by a husband and a wife in marriage. Marriage is a natural union, but a divine institution ordained of God. It was established by the Creator God at creation and derives its authority from the divine laws of God, immutable and unchangeable." So that's the beginning portion of the ceremony. And eventually you go through some scriptures and then you reach the vows. And there the vows read this way, "Do you then, blank, faithfully promise and covenant with God in the presence of these witnesses to take blank to be your lawful wedded husband or wife?" So when you go through the marriage ceremony, you are making a vow to God and making that vow before witnesses, and you are making a vow that you will be a faithful and dedicated husband or wife through all circumstances. And the words I'd like to focus on are, "for as long as you both shall live." That's a long time. As long as you both shall live. So that's the critical part of the vows that I wanted to focus on today. And with that promise being made, we're going to do this as long as we both shall live. The question is, how can we have a long-lasting marriage? How can we have a long-lasting marriage? And a long-lasting marriage is accomplished based upon the conduct of the husband and the wife. Both individuals make a contribution to the marriage relationship. And it's interesting, if we examine couples that have had long-lasting marriage relationships, what can we learn? So if you were to examine some people that have been married a long time, what can we learn? We're going to take a look at some people that have been married a long time and find out what they say is essential to a lasting marriage. And they've done certain things that have contributed to their marriage lasting. And as we look at the couples involved, they weren't necessarily Christians. They didn't necessarily act based upon the Bible. But what we will see is that they actually put into practice certain biblical principles. And even if you don't worship God, you don't read the Bible, but you even inadvertently put God's principles into practice, you'll be blessed. You'll be blessed. And these people have been. That's why they've had lasting marriages. And lasting marriages is the title of my sermon. So I'd like to look at some couples that have been married for lengthy periods of time and see what we can learn from those people. And this is not scripture heavy, but it's got some principles that hopefully you'll take to heart and say, you know what, is that going on in my marriage? So the first of the people we're going to take a look at, their names were Bob and Nona Ballard, and their names aren't all that important. That's just a sidelight to give it a little bit of substance. And they were married, they have been, as this interview took place, they'd been married 75 years. 75 years. So my wife and I have been married 45, 75. Wow, we're going to be really old. And that's a long time, 75 years. So the question was, how did you first meet? And Bob said, "After graduating from college, I couldn't find a job anywhere. I took the civil service exam for a vacant civil service position at the post office. So I got a job at the post office as a clerk at the window. My future wife was working at a bakery, and she had come into the post office Her name was Nona, and she was mailing letters to her boyfriend who was in China. So she would come in there to mail those letters, and Bob would say, "You don't need to mail those letters if you don't want to." And so he would say such things to that, and he would laugh and kid about it. And then Bob started going down to where she worked in the bakery to get a milkshake. And eventually Bob asked her to go to a dance. And after he picked her up, he came to pick her up, and as he loaded her up, he had to tell her that my headlights aren't working. So he asked her if she would be willing, imagine you're going on your first date, would she be willing to sit on the hood with a flashlight to shine it on the road so they didn't hit anything? Would you go out a second time? So anyway, see, that's how that first date went. And she said, "I didn't think much of it, doing the flashlight thing," but they drove home by the light of a flashlight that night. And they asked, "Why did you go out with him again?" Well, Nona said, "Oh, I thought he was kind of cute." The majority of the couples that I will cite today were married between 66 and 78 years when this survey was done. And most of them got married during the Great Depression. Their lives were simple. Their marriages were simple. Their honeymoons were simple. But their marriages did prove durable, as you'll see. I mean, these people were married 75 years. In each interview, the interviewer asked the same question of the couple: "What is your secret to a long and happy marriage?" And Bob said, "I can answer that right quick. To make a marriage last, you have to learn to compromise. You can't do it your way and hope that she does everything your way. You can't just do it that way. We were always able to compromise." And Nona said, "That's a lot of it." And Bob said, "We would come to an agreement that satisfies us both. You've got to do what she wants to do some of the time and what you want some of the time." And Nona said, "I think that's a good idea. I think I'll keep that in mind." And they both laughed. A marriage manual that I sometimes use is called Before You Say I Do. And it's a good manual to go through with couples. There are other things we can use, but it is a resource that we use once in a while. And the manual has a section that asks couples about their style of dealing with uncomfortable situations. It lays it out in a graph form. And it points out that there are basically two ways that human beings deal with difficulties in their marriage. These are stressful situations. And there are two ways that they're normally dealt with. Half of the people run away. Okay, I'm out of here. I'm not going to be involved in this. So it's too stressful, so they run away. And the other half, they are confrontational. So if we're going to have this confrontation, this stressful conversation, then I'm going to win. And they confront each other. So as you look at these fundamentals of life, people tend to either fight or flee. It's one or the other. The Ballards describe the principal reason for their long marriage as the willingness to compromise. And in premarital counseling, we take the principle, which they describe as compromise, and we take it a step further. Because compromise has a negative face to it and a positive face to it. So compromise can either be negative or it can be positive. It depends on the approach that you take. As married couples, the Ballards grasp the core of the positive side of compromise. And we've all probably engaged in an argument one time or another. Everybody that's been married, I'm sure, has entered into challenging situations and disagreements. And sometimes as we approach that, we approach it and we're both taking our position. Neither one is going to win, and you seek a compromise. And you find it, and both people walk away feeling cheated. Because when you compromise on the negative side, you lose something and the other party loses something. And yes, you may walk away, but both of you have lost. So you've got to find a way to compromise where both of you get something. You're not going to get everything, but you get something and you walk away happy. So, anyway, Mr. Ballard, as I said, just to look at what they said, he said, I can answer that right quick on that. To make a marriage last, you have to learn to compromise. You can't do it your way and hope that she does everything your way. I'm sure all of you as partners in the marriage have found that everything goes your way, doesn't it? So maybe that's not your experience. It never has been mine. So I get some things, I don't get everything, but we are able to work things out. So you can't do it your way all the time. It's best to compromise. So Bob said, we come to an agreement that satisfies us both. And that's what compromise means. You compromise in your marriage where as you end up at the end of the discussion, you both come away satisfied. I got some of what I wanted. She got some of what I wanted. And both parties have to give. So you don't create two losers, but the positive approach involves sticking with it and discussing it until you can come to a compromise that both people accept, that both feel people are satisfied with, and both people walk away feeling that's the way things should work out. It worked out positively, and it's going to enhance my marriage. It doesn't have to always be your way. So both parties in this kind of situation, as they compromise, they walk away feeling as if their marriage and their relationship is basically enriched by what they've gone through. And the fact that they were married 74 years tells you maybe their approach to this thing worked out. So 75, that's a wonderful milestone. The next couple, Glenn and Lois Elliott, when the interview was done, were only married 66 years. The question that was posed to them is, where did you meet? And they said, we met in high school. And Lois said, in Jefferson, a town that the high school was in. Glenn added, probably in our senior year, we met through high school fraternities. Our fraternity used to go over and have cake and ice cream when they were serving us at their house. And we started dating at that time. We went together for a while. Then I went to the service, and we graduated high school in 1941. And then I went to the service in 1943. Then I was in Miami, Florida, and she came down there, and we were married in 1944. Another question was asked, at what point did you know that you wanted to get married? And the answer was, my parents liked her, and her parents liked me. And we got along really well. So when I gave her the ring is when we decided to get married. And Lois said, at that time, when you got engaged, you intended to get married, or you didn't get engaged. So different time, different approach to things. If you got engaged, you planned on getting married. So you were committed. So they were asked, what advice would you give to a newlywed couple? And Glenn said, you don't ever take an argument to bed. You solve it before you go to sleep. And Lois said, you bet. Glenn went on to say, well, one of the first things right off the bat is getting along with your in-laws. Her dad and I were buddies. I did more with her dad almost than I did with my dad. We're so used to each other, we found ourselves saying something and thinking, that's just what I was thinking. You know, if you've been married a while, sometimes you finish each other's sentences or you're thinking something and they end up thinking about the same thing. And so probably most of us who've been married for a while experience that. Glenn said, we finish each other's sentences. And these are the fundamental elements in their marriage. And let me refer back to the workbook that I mentioned in Counseling Couples. In the workbook, there are 13 chapters, and about two-thirds of the way through, there is a chapter entitled In-Laws or Outlaws. In-Laws or Outlaws. And, you know, if you, as a minister, if you know the couple well enough, you know, then I know we tend to know where they stand with the in-laws because they're attending church and we know them. But if we don't find that to be the case, then we have to dig into this a little bit more, because in-laws or outlaws is a serious issue. And so if they really don't have a good answer to that, then you need to dig into it deeper and maybe go through the chapter with them and talk about it. We live in an age where the nuclear family is in disarray. And if you ask somebody about their family, they will most often say, well, I have my mom and dad live over here. My brothers and sisters, you know, they live in different parts of the country, maybe different parts of the state. So we're not at home at all. And if you find someone who says, you know, we live in the same city or the same county, that's pretty unusual in our day and time, because people have spread out so much for jobs and that kind of thing. So we find that families are spread out. But, you know, even if your family is spread out across the country, does it matter what they think of your marriage? Doesn't matter where they live, they're still part of the marriage situation, and you have to take that into consideration. You do marry, in a sense, you do marry their family no matter how far away they are. And you have to deal with certain things that come with that. The 66 years that the Elliots had enjoyed together, they attributed in part, in both cases, our families respected the person we were choosing to marry. So if you're marrying somebody and your parents are adamantly opposed to it, that's maybe something you need to resolve before you do get married. And they still may not approve, but you've investigated it and tried to make sure you're on the best footing you can be with those that you're going to, the person you're going to marry is seen, held in high standing with your family, or at least they're tolerating it. And that's important. So it's important to get along with your in-laws. They are part of your life in marriage. And the Elliots, and so that's something you've got to consider as you get married, and they considered it. And they were liked by their in-laws. Both sets of parents thought highly of the couple that got married. Then the Elliots brought up another issue. Glenn said, you don't ever take an argument to bed. You solve it before you go to sleep. And Lois said, you bet. And basically, I'm not sure whether they knew about the book of Ephesians in chapter 4, verses 26 and 27, but they were applying the principle. Ephesians chapter 4, verse 26 says, be angry and do not sin. Be angry and do not sin. And that's many times where people stop. They don't go on to look at the rest of the verse because they don't really understand how to process all this. Be angry and do not sin. And so what should you do? So if you're angry, and if you're going to get married, you will be angry at some point. So how do you deal with that? How do you process that? It tells you, be angry, but do not sin. And it tells you something important to do in the latter part of verse 26. It says, don't let the sun go down on your anger. So you may be angry, but it's telling us we need to resolve this before the sun sets. And it's sound wisdom if we're willing to follow it. And I would agree it's sound wisdom. I've not always been able to process it that way. So it's taken me longer than past sunset to get it worked out. So most of the time I had, but it would have been wiser for me to resolve it earlier. And it would be wise for all of us to resolve it earlier. Also, we have to realize that there's more to the verse. It's not, everything's not found in verse 26. It's also found in verse 27. Because there's a comma after verse 26, and then it says, nor give place to the devil. So as we're angry, Satan has an inroad into our life. So it says, don't let this fester, don't let it go on, because you become vulnerable to Satan, because Satan is opportunistic. He's always looking for the gap in which he can insert himself. And anger allows him a way to insert himself. In the medical field, we're all aware of how viruses and things like that are passed along. We're hearing about the coronavirus, so we're well aware of viruses being passed along. And Satan is looking for someone who is, their resistance is down, and he can make an inroad into your life. And anger allows that. That's why God says, take care of it before the sun goes down. That way, Satan has no access to you. He has no inroad because you've resolved it, because anger leads to saying things and doing things that would be inappropriate for you as a husband, so or a wife. So at the spiritual level, Paul is saying that that we need to take care of this before sunset. We will be angry from time to time, but we have to deal with it in a right and proper way, and we try to do so before the sun goes down. And we don't want to give place to the devil by continuing to be angry, because as we're angry, it festers, and it gets worse, and Satan is always looking for the way that he can make it worse, because he wants your marriage to fail. So what we see here is a description of how we can best deal with anger. We deal with it, we process it, we work it out, we do what we need to do in order that we can be at peace. And the anger, we let go of it. We ask for forgiveness, we say we're sorry, whatever we need to do in order to resolve this. And then you can go to bed. You're going to sleep a lot better than if you're in turmoil when you go to bed, and you're going to be at peace with your mate. So the Eliots were smart enough to recognize, even if they were unaware of the two verses which we've looked at here, that they needed to practice the principle that was found in these two verses. And if you don't know anything about God, but you come across this principle, these two principles here that you find in verses 26 and 27, or tithing, or whatever it is, you will be blessed for doing it. You may not know any. Is that in the Bible, really? You don't know that, but you practice it, and you will be blessed every single time because you're putting God's principles into practice. The Apostle Paul made a comment in Romans chapter 2 that the Gentiles who know not the law are a law unto themselves. So the Gentiles were not blessed with God's law, so they didn't know that. But the Gentiles at times practice the principles that are found in the Bible. And as Paul pointed out, there is a basic common sense nature to some of the laws of God that apart from the Bible make themselves apparent. And when you respect them, they preserve you. And if you look at most marriage counselings, they will point you to the issue of anger and how to seek to properly process that, even though they may not be religious. They recognize it's a problem in marriage. So this was a couple that had been married 66 years and said that part of their preservation was we had learned that we don't go to bed angry at one another. And they both agreed to do that. And that's a good thing for all of us to practice. It will bring you many benefits and will help to make your marriage better. The third couple, their names were Ed and Edith Rodiger, and Ed and Edith were married 74 years when they were interviewed. The question was asked, where were you married? And Edith replied, they were married in Vancouver. Ed said, Washington. We were living in Vernonia. And Ed said, I guess you're going to do the talking today, and I'm going to do the listening. And Edith said, okay. Then Ed said, it was during the Depression, and I was just a common, ordinary worker, and we didn't have that kind of money to spend on a big wedding and a bunch of stuff. So we went to Vancouver and got married. And how did you decide to get married? We started seeing each other, and the first thing you know, we were talking about marriage. And we figured we were made for each other. We loved each other. And Edith added, and we liked each other. Ed said, here's the secret to what we did. We decided a week after we were married, if we got into an argument, we were going to sit down and get it settled before we went to bed. We never went to bed mad at each other. That's the secret to our longevity. And it's interesting to me that we've seen several of these couples make the same mention that we didn't go to bed angry with each other. We settled our problems before we went to bed. And that contributed to 66 years of success and 74 years of success. And this was an important factor, applying the principles found in Ephesians chapter 4, verses 26 and 27. Another factor that contributed to their longevity was cited by Ed. He said, "She trusted me, and I trusted her, and I would never break that trust. We were friends, we were buddies, we were married, and that's just the way we carried on." Edith said, "Our secret to a happy marriage is to like each other before you get married." Like each other before you get married. Respect each other and just be a friend as well as a mate. That's about it. Ed and Edith seconded the Elliot's advice. We already noted the advice as being backed up by Ephesians 4. And when asked what was the secret to a lasting marriage, Ed said, "She trusted me and I trusted her. And I would never break that trust." And you know, trust is an interesting quality because you can deal with trust in different ways. Ed and Edith said, "If you can read between the lines that I care enough about you that I never want to disappoint you. And I know that you trust me." And that has placed a tremendous burden on me, a tremendous responsibility knowing that, because knowing how deeply you trust me motivates me not to disappoint you. I never want to disappoint you. And the other partner said exactly the same thing. So when two people are functioning in the environment that says, "I'm tempted here, I can be tempted there, I can be pulled astray in another place," and the thought goes through their minds, "I'm living in an environment when I walk away from home, or where when we are together, that I do so with a tremendous amount of faith in me and my integrity on the part of my spouse. I can't violate that. She trusts me, and I can't violate that trust." Many young couples don't stop to mentally walk through a trust scenario to ponder the consequences of breached trust. In our society, people get married today. It's a disposable society, and there are people that get married and said, "If it doesn't work out, we'll get a divorce." And it's just the way things are done. No big deal. But it is a big deal. It is a big deal. It's easy to say, if things don't work out, we'll just get a divorce, but that's a very high price to pay. It's interesting, as you look at marriages of celebrities usually last about 2 years if you start measuring it out. And when you get to the 2-year point, things are going downhill because all the excitement and the glow has begun to wear off. And that's the way it is for all of us. Your wife may see you as Prince Charming, but that lasted about 2 years, maybe earlier, depending. And she's the princess and so wonderful. And then about 2 years in, she's not quite as much of a princess as I thought when we got married. That's not putting anybody down. That's just reality. This is the person that I married. And I made a commitment to them, and it doesn't matter. I'm committed through the ups and the downs and all of it, all the way through. So I'm going to do my best to make it a success. So, and you have to stop and think about this particular scenario of trust. You have a trust in your relationship, and you want to maintain that. You don't want to disappoint the person that you marry. There's another valuable piece to be found that describes the trust. Let's go to Proverbs chapter 31. Proverbs chapter 31 and look at verse 10. Proverbs chapter 31 and look at verses 10 and 11. Proverbs 31 verse 10. Now, in this chapter we find the information about the virtuous woman, and it's good to look at this in regard to a woman and her being a virtuous wife, and it's also important to a man being a virtuous man as well. It works both ways. The principles work both ways. In verse 10 it says, who can find a virtuous wife? And living in this age, who can find a virtuous man? For his or her worth is far above rubies. You know, to find a virtuous person and to be able to marry them is a great blessing. It's worth a great deal. Worth above, more valuable than precious stones. Verse 11 says, the heart of her husband safely trusts her. And the same thing is true for the husband. The heart of the wife safely trusts him. So he will have no lack of gain. You know, to trust one another is of great value in your relationship. And it's important to the relationship. And as you look at this couple that's been married 74 years, they said one of the fundamental things that made their marriage work was they trusted each other. They mention another thing that will be repeated later on. Ed said, we were friends. We were buddies. We were married, and that's the way we carried on. Edith said, our secret to a happy marriage was to like each other before you get married and respect each other. And just be friends as well as a mate. We live in a very sexually charged generation. And, you know, you get the conception that sex is everything, but it's not. It's part, but it's not the whole package. Durability between a man and woman has to be more than hormonal. And both the Rodigers said, for a marriage to last, you have to like somebody and they have to be a friend. You have to have a relationship at that level because that endures and is steady. The romantic, hormonal side of marriage goes up and down, but this friendship part of it works all the time, like clockwork. The Rodiger said, we do love each other romantically, but we are buddies and we are friends. And most important to it, which is most important to a lasting relationship. They're buddies, they're friends, they do things together, they enjoy doing things together, and enjoy being together. Let's go to the next couple, John and Jesse Spear. They were married 75 years when they did the interview. And the question was, how did you meet? And John says to Jesse, do you want to tell the story? And Jesse said, yes, I was being transferred to his school. I was a freshman, and he paid attention to me. He teased me a bit. We burned coal for fuel, shell coal, which I don't know much about, but anyway, it was shell coal, little bitty pieces. And I had a dress on that had ice cream pockets. Does everybody know what ice cream pockets are? I didn't, so I looked it up on my phone when I was heard this. So anyway, ice cream pockets. And so there are big pockets on the front of the dress that kind of, you know, if you look at them, they kind of look like an ice cream. The ice cream's on top of the cone. And anyway, they're called ice cream pockets, and they're a real deal because I looked them up. But anyway, these pockets are on the front of her dress, and so what he was doing with the coal was trying to throw it into her pockets. So, and I'm thinking, coal on my dress? I'd be kind of upset with that. But he was trying to get her attention. So he was using what he had available, I guess. Because he said, I had to get her attention some way, and then he left. After that, I went to music class, and he would sit behind me, and then he would give me gum. So he was passing out gum probably under the nose of the teacher. If the teacher found out back in that day, probably they were reprimanded. And he was paying a little more attention to me all the time. He told me that my red hair attracted him, and she laughed. So when my hair turned gray, I thought I might lose him. But anyway, I just liked him. I liked his manner, his neatness, and just the way he conducted himself like a gentleman. So Anyway, he was doing things to get her attention, and eventually they got together. John, I don't know if I pulled her hair, or maybe she had ribbons in it, and I pulled them or something. Anyway, just to get her attention. Oh, I think it worked. It must have, because I've got her. And then he laughed. Eventually, when they were asked, what is your secret to a long and happy marriage? John said, loving one another. It's a commitment one makes to the other. And Jesse said, I want to do unto him as I want him to do unto me. Does that sound familiar at all? I wouldn't want to hurt or displease him. Later, they were asked, what advice would you give to newlyweds? And John said, whatever comes up, trust one another that they're doing the right thing and that they will do the right thing. And as you think about that, that you trust them that they will do the right thing, trust is crucial. And there's a positive side to trust and there's a negative side to trust. They wanted to trust each other. They wanted to give each other leeway and give them the benefit of the doubt. The Spears came at it from from different sides. One was being faithful morally, and the other is they wanted to trust each other in the sense of giving each other latitude in life. Don't hold each other in a tight rein, and don't put each other in a small box. So one of the couples was dealing with trust from the standpoint of don't betray the other, and the other was dealing with trust from the standpoint of being big-hearted, having magnanimous spirit, give latitude, and let each person blossom. As men, we tend to hold ladies into a very tight box, and women can do the same, but in a different way, basically trying to keep control of him and being afraid to let go and let him be a little bit more, have more room to roam. Not in a negative way, but based upon his talents and abilities. Men and women process differently. A woman feels restrained when a man tries to keep her on a tight leash, which we shouldn't do. And a man feels restrained when he knows he doesn't have his wife's approval or blessing. So, each of us come at it from our particular perspective because we're male and female. And there are different things that are important to us. So he likes to know that as he moves forward, that we are moving forward together. And it's not like the wife is sitting back waiting for him to fail. Got her arms crossed and waiting for him to fall short. So it's trust, but different kinds and permutations. They mentioned the word commitment, and in modern America, we have a disposable society in which marriage is treated as disposable. So if it doesn't work out, we'll get a divorce. And people have said that. People have said that. Well, if it doesn't work out, we'll get a divorce. Well, you should never go into it with that thought in your head. There's got to be a really good reason why that would be the case. So you want to be committed, and you're going to have rocky times. There are good times and bad times, and there are difficulties that you have to go through. But once you get through them, many times it gets better. But if you quit when you get, you're newly married in the first few years and things don't go well, then you don't want to just give up. You want to stick with it. And that's in many things in life. If you stick with it, it's going to work out. It may not appear so, but it will. Let's go on to the next couple. Truman and Isla Moultrie, married 70 years. The question was asked, how did you meet? And Isla said, I think our marriage was preordained by God because I saw Truman so many times before I ever knew him. So she would see Truman around. She didn't know him. And she points out he played in a band, and they had an opening on a local radio station. And there he was with his trio, and I thought, he's good looking. He has black hair and a black mustache, and he was really cute. And Truman just laughed. He started going with my very best girlfriend, Norma, and she moved 70 miles away, and Truman couldn't get travel all that far to keep up the relationship. So the next Saturday, my sister and I went to the local dance hall in town, and we were headed to the door, and Truman and his buddies were coming toward us. And he comes right up to me and says, "Hey, do you like chicken?" And I say, "Yes." And he says, "Grab a wing." And so she grabbed his arm, and on into the dance they went. Now, I don't recommend trying these in the 2020. Or you may just say, "I'm trying something a little different, see how it goes." She's probably going to think, "What is this?" But anyway, she grabbed his wing, and on they went into the dance. And she said, "We've been dancing together ever since." She said, "Also, that I lied. I hate chicken." So they both they both laughed at that point in time, and they went on with the interview. "What advice would you give to newlyweds?" And Isla said, "I think you've got to be aware of each other's feelings. That's what we try to do." She continued, "First of all, you have to be in love, and you've got to communicate. I think you've got to be aware of each other's feelings. That's what we do." Isla went on to say, "When I said my vows, I remember them. It's forever." Later, the question was asked, "What is your secret to a long and happy marriage?" Again, and trying to please each other, do things together repeatedly. The matter of communication comes up in a marriage. Really, the three major things you have to deal with in marriage counseling is usually communication, money, and sex. Those are the three biggies that you have to deal with. And as you think about communication, it's more than just talking. It's more than just talking. If you ever study people and you watch people talking or supposedly talking, you'll see people, it's interesting the way they go about conversation. And as you're watching it, there are multiple things that may be going on. You can watch some people and you will see a conversation. They're actually going back and forth. He speaks, she listens, and then she speaks to him and he listens, and it goes back and forth. There's actually a conversation. However, you can watch other people and see dual monologues. And basically what's taking place is he talks and she's thinking about what I'm going to say. And then once he's done, as soon as he finishes and there's a gap that she can jump into, she says what she has to say. And then he's not listening. He's, basically getting ready to respond, and he's thinking about what he's going to say. And there's not a conversation going on. You have two monologues going on. And that's not communication. You can also have neither person is listening to the other, and that's not a conversation. You also have filibusters. And that is, one person is talking and the other person can't get a word in edgewise. They keep talking and you can't get any, you're part of the conversation. They're not interested. I'm talking, so just sit and listen. And basically, like in the Senate, they're going to talk and keep talking and just, they're not going to let anybody else talk. And that's not communication either. People call all of those things conversations, but two of them aren't. Only one is, where there's really an exchange of ideas and it goes back and forth. So when they gave advice to newlyweds, they said, you do have to be in love and you do have to communicate. And if you look at the Before You Say I Do handbook, three of the biggest chapters in the book are on communications. So there's a lesson in that. In marital counseling, we can talk about finances, we can talk about the marital relationship, we can talk about in-laws, we can talk about how we view each other, we can talk about all sorts of things. But is communication taking place between you and your spouse? Many married couples do not communicate. But it's important to an ongoing relationship. And hopefully you are entering into conversations with your spouse. And you're able to communicate with each other. You're able to say what you have to say, and you're able to listen and respond appropriately. So as a couple begins to have a good relationship, they learn and to express what the other person is thinking. They can finish a sentence for them because they've had good communication over the years. And they just kind of know the other person and what they're thinking. Another couple, Eugene and Lorraine Hill, married 71 years. Question is, how did you meet? And as you look at these, it's interesting. They're all in very simple circumstances, things that, you know, were common back then and were really pretty simple. You know, I kind of think of them as back in the Mickey Rooney age and all of that in those old movies. If you've seen those, and those of you who are younger, who's Mickey Rooney and what are you talking about? But anyway, the movies were just so simple, and the things that they did. Oh, we're going to have a play at school, and everybody's all excited. You're like, no way people think like that. They used to. It was much more simple. It was much more simple. The question is, how did you meet? The Forest Service had a ski hill. Shortly after my 14th birthday, I was at the ski races and I saw Eugene. He was number 14. He won the race and I thought he was cute. I don't know whether girls, would girls say cute today? He was cute. I don't know, good looking or hot, you know, things have changed. Unfortunately, they lived in different towns until high school. They went to school to a school concert, and when it was over, Elaine said, "Who's going to walk me home?" And Eugene said, "I will." And that's how it started. Poor boy, Eugene. Yeah, he was poor boy. She snared him, and they got married in high school, and the principal let them finish out their senior year. I don't think they'd do that today, but they did back then. And what's the secret of your long marriage? Lorraine said, "Well, we've always done everything with our families, but we've always made time for each other. We come first, and I think you need to put each other first, and don't forget to say, 'I love you,' every day." And what they're expressing is the very first principle of child rearing, and that is, you must put each other first. You don't put the kids first. We're a very kid-centric world today, but you don't put the kids first. You put you and your spouse first. And why is that? Because you are the example. You're the example. And if you want them to be stable, you want them to benefit from your example, then they need to see that you and your spouse love each other. You think highly of each other. They need to hear you say to your spouse, "I love you," to see you hug. They need to see all of those things in your relationship. And as Lorraine said, we've always done everything with our families, but we've always made time for each other. We come first. That's not saying neglect your children, but you put the priority on your marriage first. Because if you're failing, it's not, what kind of example is that for the kids? So they need to see that you love each other and you're important to each other, and it gives them stability. Mom and Dad love us, and it's shown by the fact that they do love each other, and it's important to them. And as you look at how marriage started when God created man and woman, God tells us in Genesis chapter 2, verse 24, "Therefore a man shall leave his father and mother and be joined or cleave to his wife, and they shall become one flesh." And they need to see that. The last group was Galen and Yolinda Schlegel, married 73 years. Asked how they met, Galen said, "I went to work in a flour mill when I was 15, mostly tending the garden. Later, I drove the truck delivering feed to the farmers. Yola, I never knew my mother and father. They died when I was quite young, and my grandmother raised my brother and I. When I finished high school, jobs were hard to get. We had a neighbor who knew somebody down in a neighboring town that had a flour mill, and they got me a job down there as a bookkeeper." Galen, they lived in a big, what was like a big boarding house. Had wonderful meals that they would eat together as a group. And anyway, all the guys were seeing Yola come out on a bright, sunny morning. Oh, yes, look at that young girl there in the bright sunshine, and they're all taking a look at her. And he said that they all wanted to run out and grab a hold of her, but me. I didn't want to do that because I didn't have a car or anything. My brother was a romantic guy, the husband in this relationship said. My brother was a romantic guy, so he took her to the strawberry fair, and I tagged along. And he started laughing about how he stole Yola from his older brother. And they walked through their life and eventually got married, and they arrived at the place where they were asked, what is the secret of a long and happy marriage? Galen said, what's fair to one is fair to the other. Yola said, exactly. I read these stories about all this loving and kissing, you know, and that's how the couple keeps it going. It's a lot of malarkey. She said, we never want to be mad at each other. Yola said, we were very fortunate. We got three wonderful daughters. The core of their input, what's fair to one is fair to the other. The key to living happily is don't go to bed mad at each other. And that's a shorthand way with three different couples saying we place communication, not talk, not filibuster, not lobbying at the top of our priorities. We talked through, as one couple said, to compromise. And their definition of compromise was the high end of what compromise means. I willingly give up. This is part of the compromise. It's interesting that Galen's simple statement is nothing short of a rehash of Matthew chapter 7, verse 12. There it says, therefore, whatever you want men to do to you, do also to them. For this is the law and the prophets. And you know what? If you apply that in your marriage, it will work. It will bring most positive benefits. Therefore, whatever you want men to do to you, do also to them, for this is the law of the prophets. We would know that as the golden rule. And, you know, if we want to summarize all the books from Genesis to Deuteronomy and from Deuteronomy to Malachi, with some others thrown in, they all come down to one thing. Every single solitary way you would like to be treated in life, treat those next to you the same. That is, therefore, all things, whatever you would have men do to you, do you even to them. For this is basically a summary of the law and the prophets. And Galen and Yolanda Schlegel, their advice comes after 73 years of marriage. But if you ever want a simple reminder of what gives longevity to marriage, that allows you to end your days happy, to be a father, and happy that the lady beside you is the mother of your children and vice versa, take a look at some of the things that we've looked at today as far as advice about having a long marriage. All the principles are found in the Bible, and they're fairly simple. And if we take and apply them in our marriage relationships, then we will have lasting marriages. So hopefully that will give you some food for thought, and thank you for your attention.